a little over 2 weeks ago, I had an operation for what I was originally told was a cancerous growth in a diverticulum in my bladder. When they opened me up, the doctor saw the diverticulum and it was surrounded by, he called it fibrotic tissue, which he frighteningly assumed was cancer all over the place. And he immediately cut out some of it and sent it off to the lab to be biopsied immediately and began trying to cut the diverticulum away from its attachment to all this other stuff. And he said it was a much bigger operation than he thought, because he thought he was just going to go in, cut it, take it out. And he had to snip every little bit of it away. He couldn't get all the tissue out. He said it would have been a much, much longer operation. But the result came back that there was no cancer in that. So that whatever it is that's growing there is just weird stuff. And he got the diverticulum out, and he sent it off to a lab, and they came back and said they could find no cancer in it either. So either the original diagnosis was wrong, or somehow when they biopsied it, they actually got rid of all the cancer. So whatever it is, at this point, I appear to be free of whatever that stuff was, which is, we think. I mean, the doctor doesn't know whether to treat me as a cancer patient or not a cancer patient, which is a really big deal, because you're treated very differently when you are one. But I feel very free of that. And they've sewn me back up, and the experience of being in a hospital for 2 weeks, the experience of all the drugs, the experience of the enormity of pain that comes along with it, is an incredibly powerful teaching. I mean, really powerful. And unfortunately, I'm afraid to tell you, nobody's going to get out of here without it. It's a teaching that absolutely informs us, and you hopefully can maybe get away with it once, but a lot of people don't get away with it once. The body is a deteriorating organism. That's all it is. It builds up and then it falls apart. And every one of us is wildly identified with it. We're not only identified with the physicality of it, but with the life that it seems to have lived, with the emotions that it seems to have, with the thoughts that it thinks every day. It's a really powerful force field. And being in a hospital where there is just constant pain, you're not going to find spiritual truth. You're not going to find, oh, it's just pain. It's really pain, and it really hurts, and it really does take over in many ways, and you have to give yourself over to it. Don't look to escape the thing that's happening. It's happening. And, you're very grateful in those moments for the drugs that they give you, and you learn a lot, although I was very determined to get off the drugs as fast as I could and managed to do that. On the other hand, while I had them, I was so thankful. And, the body is in a state of great shock going through something like this. It really goes through some kind of transformation. There are enormous lessons imparted by realizing that you're a biological formation. And a lot happens in the experience of pain. One of them is, and this is the thing I started to feel, unbelievable compassion for everybody else who's in pain. Because you can't understand what anybody's going through until you're there. You just cannot get it. You can try, you can imagine it. But until you're there and you go, oh my God, there are so many people experiencing this all the time. And I've talked about pain in the last several months, because this has been, since Thanksgiving, a time where that's a focal point for me. This was the epitome of it. And even when it's all over, the universe isn't done with me. They decided to give me vertigo. I never had vertigo. And my doctor, when I spoke to him, assumed it was a stroke. So he said, get to the emergency room immediately. And we did. And, I won't describe vertigo other than the worst amusement park ride you've ever been on, and you can't get off. And you just spin out of control. And luckily they diagnosed it as that, and they even showed Blanche. They had me look, turn my head in different directions, and when I was lying down and when I went to the right, my eyes went, is this how they went? Like they wouldn't stop. I mean, continually. I had no control of focal point. They were just spinning everywhere. And they gave me some stuff, and it stopped. They said it was an inner ear infection or a salt crystal in the ear, which I don't know why that occurred. And then I got, as you can hear, a respiratory infection. So they're not done with me. This just keeps going on and on, and you keep wanting some relief from all of it. And they've got me totally exhausted. I mean, really exhausted. So I want to be better, and I'm not better. On the other hand, I thought, try teaching class today and see what happens. And that was a revelation. It's always a revelation. But you sit down in the middle of your biology, in the middle of your discomforts and pain, and because you guys are here, and I have to say that's a big part of this, because you're here and because there is a demand for presence to serve you, it rises up within this body. And I just felt unbelievably, beautifully connected to you all. The presence was so strong, so loving, so clear, so knowing what to do. It has this enormous desire to let you know it's there. It's the only way I can put it. It just wants you to know, hey, wow. It's all at once. It's a minor element of realization for you to look at yourself and go, if you can see it, I mean, many of you feel it. Many of you go, oh, this feels so good. Wow, this is, oh, I'm glad I came. I didn't want to come, but I'm glad I came. You go through those kind of things. But what really happens inside is presence appears, and it wants you to know it's there. It's there, it's in you. And what's wonderful about presence is it's so wise, so intelligent, so knowing of what to do for you. It has such clarity, it has such truth in it. And it's so at the core of who you are. It's not separate from you, it's there. The only thing that separates you from it, I've said this 5 billion times, is you're not thinking about it. You're not paying attention to it. You're worrying about everything else and thinking about everything else, and you don't know that this unbearably beautiful gift is sitting right there. And when I connect with you, all I try to do is bring that vibration into such prominence that you can't ignore it, that you cannot not go, oh. And you may not get it totally in that little cognitive way, but you'll go, wow. And you kind of don't want to leave it. You kind of don't want to ever go anywhere else but there because it's so amazing and wonderful and perfect and beautiful and at the core of your being. And the fact that so many people never get to really know it, not that they don't experience it, but they don't know it. You can experience it all the time. You know, going to bed at night, ah, oh, making love, ah, oh, eating chocolate, ah. Oh. You know, you get all this, you get all these wonderful moments of it, but to you it's just pleasure. It's not pleasure, it's this deep, profound, yes, yes. Wow, this is me. And then in the middle of this week, lying in bed one night, sleeping on my back, which I never do, but I had to. Suddenly, I had this dream. And in the dream, I was with some people, it was somebody, and this guy walks me into a room. And it's kind of a sanctuary, but it's not particularly grand on any level. It's kind of wooden, and it's kind of oldish. And there, it's a little bit dark, and in the background is something on the wall that looks a little bit like a Buddha, but it's kind of tilted on its side. So there's definitely nothing about this place that makes you think, oh my God, I'm in the sanctuary of sanctuaries. But the minute you walk in the door, something tells you, behold, fall to your knees. You are in the presence of, you are in the presence. I don't know what to say to you, but I have never known a moment like that. The experience that I was given was so consummately beautiful, so full, so everything biblical that you can imagine about behold the wonder. It made no sense because there was nothing that I was looking at that had beauty. But everything, it was in its imperfection so beautiful, and the experience of love and crying and gratitude and overwhelming sense of envelopment. And it didn't say anything to me at all. It just was, this is who you are. This is what you arrive at. This is your eternal self. That's all it said. And then right at that moment, I got a jab of bat bladder pain. And it just kind of went up. And if I hadn't had that jab of bladder pain, I would never have remembered this unbelievable thing. And I got up and I walked to the bathroom. And as I'm walking to the bathroom, the beauty of this thing is still radiating. And it said to me, you walk in beauty. Not me, Bruce, all of us. You walk in beauty, that we are surrounded by beauty. And often it's a dim little sanctuary with very little light and a kind of wooden walls, a little kind of befuddled Buddha hanging on a wall, and it is like perfection itself. You just have to be there. You just have to know it. And this all came up in a moment that I have to discuss with you. In the arrival at having to make a decision about whether to sell or not sell this house. And we have been negotiating with a couple who want to own it, and they kind of lowballed us. And we were here, and then we started doing this thing which people do to arrive at a middle. And I got to a point where I said, no, I do not want to sell this place. I love this place. It's the most beautiful, wonderful place I've ever been in my life. I've never seen a place that's prettier. I am enthralled by it. I am captivated by it. I can't do it. And I announced to my closest and dearest that I couldn't do it. And I started describing how there were these financial things that were going to come into play that would make it all very supportable somehow, not in an easy way, but kind of enough. And I thought, wow, I know what I want, this is what I'm going to do. And the next day, I get two emails that completely wiped out those financial backups. So I had no financial backups at all. And then I said, oh, it's like the universe going, you're going to have to look at this with a very clear eye, a very clear eye. And so Blanche and I sat down and did what's called the financial clear eye. And I realized we can't stay here. We cannot. And we had to make a counter offer, which was going to be the final offer. And we made it an offer that we knew they could accept. It was not bad for us, and it was not terrible for them. And the day before we made the offer, I went through complete attachment hell. All of the years and decades of spiritual work that I have done, that I kept using to find clarity about what to do, I kept going, how can I let go of paradise? How do you do that? How do you let go of the most beautiful place you've ever been in? You know, and this place has caused me grief in time, over time, because I had to work so hard to keep it going. And, you know, write scripts I didn't want to write just to keep it going. At the same time, I just went, it's so beautiful here. I want my granddaughter here. I love all you guys so much, and I just don't want to lose all that. And I kept fighting this decision. And then I kept going to the financial side. if I do this, I'll be able to provide for my children and my granddaughter for the rest of their lives, and we will be fine and comfortable and no worries, and life will be easy. And then I'm going, but the beauty, it's so wonderful. And it's like the seductive mistress or the siren call. You know, I couldn't let go of this place. I would walk outside, I would start crying. Everywhere I would turn, I would just start crying. It's so, I love it. And I'm telling you, it was absolute misery. And finally Blanche called our accountant. She was talking to him, and he basically said, yeah, you can live there, but you'll go broke. And that was just like, okay. So, anyway, we accepted the offer. And this is the last summer of our life in this house. And it was really the hardest, most grief-stricken experience I have ever gone through. And I'm talking just for me. I have got the most amazing, supportive, brilliant, beautiful, wonderful wife. And she supported, she helped me through this. And she's the one who has more attachment to this house than I ever had. If anybody's ever been happier in a place, it's Blanche. So she's had to deal with this and has dealt with it in ways so superior to my capacity to do it. It was really humbling. It was really humbling. But it really explains what marriage is. It explains how two people have to make decisions together, how two people in a marriage can reinforce support, carry each other through really hard times. I have never felt more love for my wife. I've never felt more love for the world, for everything about it. Anything at this moment will make me cry. The tenderness, this idea of leaving something you love, leaving something you don't want to leave. I mean, we've left so many apartments, and we've left so many houses, and we've moved on so many times. But walking away from something you love, how do you do that? How do you do it? And yet, I have to say, in the end, we all do it. We're all going to walk away from something we love, and that really, even if you don't know you love it, it's called life. We all walk away from this. And the more you love it, the harder it will be, and the greater it will be. Because you don't want to walk away from life hating it. You just don't. You want to walk away from life loving it. So, I'm learning as I go. I am being taught by my wife. I'm being taught by all of you. I'm being taught by this experience of sitting here. It's amazing to sit here in the midst of all of this stuff that's going on and to find this place of absolute presence. It's not attached to anything. It doesn't care. It tells you you are already in a beautiful place. You will never be anywhere but in a beautiful place, ever. No matter where you are, you walk in beauty. And I'm telling you, that message was not to Bruce. That message is to all of us. We walk in beauty. If you don't see it, you don't see it. This place is eye-poppingly beautiful. But so I have a nice house, a really lovely house in LA. I've lived in nice apartments. I've lived in little places all over. And they've all been beautiful. Really, they've all been beautiful. And partly because Blanche knows how to put a house together, and partly because beauty is there. You know, I know all of you. You all have homes that are, I know, I'm sure I've not been in all of them, but beautiful and satisfying. So here we are, really now truly coming to the end of something. You know, we're going to be here through the summer. These people who are moving into the house, they're wonderful, wonderful couple with a lot of money. And they have said, take as much time as you need, and they've given us, you know, we've talked about mid-October, I suspect we could go that long, to get everything out of here, to move back to LA, and to say goodbye. So there will be classes through the summer, pretty much like it has been for the last 15 years. And during those classes, one thing is going to happen. I'm going to sit here with you and try desperately, before I leave this place, to make sure you guys know what it feels like to be present. To know what it feels like to be, oh, that. And to know that you don't need me to get there. To know that it's yours. It's never been mine. It's completely shared. It's ours. It's one thing. Every human being has it. Every person in the world experiences it, and only a few wake up to the fact that that's what it is. It's right there. It's right there all the time. And my whole goal as a teacher is just to let you go, oh, that's all. You know, and once you've done it, you've done it. Because it's just there. It's just you. It's who you are. It's your very basic nature. And if you're caught up in your drama and your ego, God bless you. We're all caught up in our drama, in our ego. But the gift of a spiritual practice is you can go into, over and over, this place and find a kind of, I call it a refuge, but it's really something else. It's really find truth. Just find truth. Who you are. And you go, of course. And it settles things down. I couldn't get there at all during this process of letting go of the house. I mean, I couldn't work my way there. I really had to go through the stuff. And I've always had a hard time crying. I'm not good at crying. I don't know why. It's like a structure. And this week I have been very good at crying. It just starts to happen all the time, you know. And you know, you've probably done it too. You watch the tornadoes in Oklahoma. You know, I mean, it doesn't even matter what it is anymore. It just starts to well up. And what you realize, I mean, this is so wildly important. Life is unbearably beautiful and therefore unbearably sad. Because everything you ever get in life is going to be lost. Everything. So the preciousness of each second of your life, the cliche of that is enormous, but it's so true. This moment is only right now, and it's going to fade. It's going to go. But there's another moment. And another, at least for now. So you just learn to love those moments. And be ready to let it go. And so when you do that, when you realize that your whole house can be taken away in a second, your children can be taken away in a second, the fact that anything is still there is a miracle. It's a miracle. You know, we're still sitting in a room, it's still pretty. You know, it's cold outside, not cold in here. It's a miracle. And learning to live in the knowledge of that, learning to embrace the underlying sorrow that goes along with the beauty, and accepting the total package. Because you cannot have just the beauty. You cannot have just the happiness. It doesn't work that way. You have to buy into the whole thing. And every one of us, I mean, I can see it so clearly now. That hospital stay was brilliant. Because I don't want to look at all of you in the hospital. I don't want to look at all of you saying goodbye to people you love. But I know it's coming. I know it's coming. I know the sadness that awaits you. And I know the beauty that comes out of that. And if you don't want to be angry and cynical and why me, God, get your spiritual life together. Because it all is going to happen, and the only difference will be whether you can go yes to it, yes to the beauty and yes to the sorrow, or whether you're in a state of absolute fury and anger because you never made peace with what this is. This is a very temporary experience. Very temporary. And I do look back now, I have to say, at how people spend their lives. It's really fascinating to me. It's just so fascinating. Because I was one of these people. You spend your whole life doing stuff, building a career, building a family, building credentials, whatever it is. It's so empty and meaningless. And yet you can't know that and live in this world. It has to be important. It has to be important. Because otherwise, who would do it? Life wouldn't happen if it wasn't important. And then you hit this mark. I call it, for me it was 70, but it could be anything. And you go, all that stuff's fading away. I don't have a career anymore. Nobody knows of me as anything. Even if they do, who cares? There's this feeling of has been. There's this feeling of, you know, what did it add up to? I have no idea. The only thing I know is I have my wife still. I have my granddaughter, I've got my children, I've got this huge family, and I've got you guys. That's what it adds up to. That's all it is. And if you don't get that in your life, if you don't build that into the equation, you're going to end up in this world really lonely. Really lonely and really alone. We all end up there anyway, and it probably is a good thing to figure out how to live like that, how to have that. And I haven't worked that one out at all. It's kind of that, you know, for me to live on my own, alone somewhere, is the most frightening idea imaginable. And yet, one of us is going to experience that. And that's how it works. And you have to figure out how to enjoy and love the richness of the life you have. And then if you can find this place of, find a way to get through the day on your own. That's the joy and the gratitude that you get for spiritual life. And it ain't easy. Even if you're good at it, it's not easy. It's doable. That's the thing. It's doable. This presence that's in you is not going anywhere. And when you're all alone and when there's nobody else available to you, it's right there. And I'm telling you, when you sit in meditation and you open up and you feel this presence, or when your whole ego mind history narrative falls away and you realize that's all there is presence, that's what you get. You get this enormously beautiful self. And then, and I'll leave you with this, at some point they will lead you into the sanctuary and a voice will say, behold, something will say, fall to your knees, and you won't even have to be told it because that's what you'll do, and you will fall flat on the floor in front of something that's even greater than anything we've spoken about or can speak about, and it's at the heart of your being. And that's what awaits. That's what awaits. And I can't even touch upon the beauty of that. Enjoy the ride, guys. Any questions?
I want to thank the both of you. I'm new to the world of both of you, but I've already missed the place. I'm so happy to see your shining face and wish you both so much energy, because there's so much going on. And of course I have to do the me. This week of my birthday week, one of my relatives heard me, which very rarely happens, as I am a black sheep, and often proud of it and sometimes sad about it, but actually heard me, and it was wonderful. And in the next 5 minutes, somebody who I genuinely care about hurt me so much in a financial situation that I helped them with, which I truly probably shouldn't have done. I let that trump the other. And I thought, how did I get here again? I don't want that to trump that. I want to know how to allow the light to be full enough so that I don't have to take in the shadow.
But see what you just did? You just understood the whole situation. You really understood it. Most people don't understand it. They don't understand that they just trumped joy with anger and hostility. Once you understand that, then you go, look what I did. Once you go, look what I did, you don't have to do it again and again. But even if you do, you can go, oh, that's what I did. That clarity is part of the clarity of the self. It's the speaking of truth. That's what I do to myself. That's what we all do to ourselves. And you forgive yourself for it because every human being on the planet does it. There's nobody who's free of that. There's nobody walking around that I know of in a state of perfection, meaning they're always in the light. What they're in is the light and the dark. And they're aware of the kinds of lessons you've got. And to address black sheep. Rudy once said, nobody who comes to this class is not the black sheep of their family. That's how you get here. If you're not a black sheep, you don't look for this stuff. But it's all of us are people who've struggled, everybody, and have been rejected by the ones we're closest to. But then you slowly, through this, work your way back into the family, and occasionally, if you're truly lucky, you will be seen, you will be acknowledged, and you will be heard. It's a great thing, and it will be worth it. That's what happens. And then after a while, if you're really lucky, you'll be heard all the time. And you will hear as well, because everyone's looking for that. And once you're aware what it's like when they do it to you, you can do it to them. And one of the gifts of being a spiritual person is to walk around hearing and seeing and acknowledging everyone around you, because they all deserve it. Every person around you deserves it and craves it. We all want that, of course. We want to be loved. Very simple. Anyone else?
One of the things I've been feeling is that, you know, approaching that big 7-0, I want to make everything, I want to have what I'm doing now count. You know, I feel like I'm seeing the end of the tunnel, you know, and hopefully it's far away. But I was just wondering if you could talk about how to go about being the best person you can be in the face of, you know,
well,
getting older.
I mean, staying motivated helps a lot of people. You know, I mean, my problem is having gotten pretty much everything I wanted, I don't have anything on the agenda. I just don't have anything in front of me.
What if you did?
That's what I'm going to try to get to.
Yeah.
If I hadn't found it, I think there would be a kind of richness in my older age to still trying to get there, still trying to make it happen. And that is a way to motivate your older years. A lot of people are very benefited by having stuff they still want to do, you know, whatever that may be. And you can use it really well. But I will alert you to the one thing that you may or may not want to know, or maybe you don't need to know it. But even if you get it, it will not add up. Even if you get it, if you get the biggest art show in New York, and if you get headlines in the New York Times, and everyone in the world loves you, it won't give you, you'll discover, it's like, oh, that wasn't what I was looking for. It wasn't. It really, I mean, it is on a certain level. But, you know, I've been given so many of those things, and then they just go away. There's the good ones, and if you get the good ones, then you're going to get the bad ones. One way or the other, you can't get the thing you're looking for because it doesn't exist. What you're looking for is something deep inside that goes, I put truth into the world. I spoke truth. I created art that was truth. I did the thing that needed to be done. And you will not care. You will not care whether anybody gets it or doesn't get it because you needed to do it. And one thing I think that's very important for people, you don't want to get to the age of 70 and realize you haven't done anything in your life. You have to find the things that were worth doing, whatever it may be. You know, what have you done that will make you feel this was a good thing? Because there's this incredible quality of judgment that comes, especially toward the end of life, and it can be very, very painful and obliterating. You want to feel good about your life. Whatever that may be, it could just be you planted the most beautiful garden imaginable in your house. You truly did it. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, Broadway or whatever. It really can be the simplest thing. You know, one of the joys I have of this house is Blanche planted almost every inch of this place. I walk around and I go, oh my God, I keep finding this stuff that she's done. You know, New York Times hasn't written reviews about it, but my heart has. It does every day, you know, and I don't want to leave it, which is another wonderful teaching, because yes, you have to at some point. You have to do what you have to do. Figure it out and do it. It doesn't have to do, and I mean, if it does have to do with recognition, you will be disappointed. If it has to do with speaking your truth, you will at least experience the joy of trying. We don't all get there. I've never gotten there completely. Never. You know, but I don't...
That is the first thing. That's the first thing that really, I really care about.
Yeah.
But I'm having trouble reconciling the two things because I feel like what I care about more is, the most, is being and saying what I have to say as deeply as I can say it.
That's the goal.
And what exists on the other side is, you know, sort of like a bunch of people who don't care about that.
At all. We have a lot of friends here. I can't even begin a dialogue like we're having here. And this is the only truth I know. I can't speak it to these people because they don't get it.
Right.
On the other hand, what I've discovered is I can speak a simple personal truth. And the thing I noticed with some friends at dinner last night, speaking my own personal truth, they felt liberated. At one point I said that I'd gone to this wonderful therapist here that I just love completely. And this guy looked at me and went, "Can I get her name?" He would never have said that. He would never have said that, but he felt so liberated that some human being actually said, "I go to a therapist who lives near you." He was so thrilled by that. And I could feel that instant, his heart just opened. He felt safe. He felt in the presence of everything we're talking about, but there's not one thing in him that would have identified it in the way we talk about it here. All he knew was that somebody spoke a moment of truth to him, and it was important. And that may be all we can get, you know. But not everybody will get it. If I said that to some other people, they would go, he goes to a therapist. Blanche and I, when we moved to DeKalb, went out to dinner with the guy who headed the drama department, and had a wonderful dinner, and then somehow we mentioned to them we had lived in an ashram. They never, ever saw us again. Ever. It was like, exactly. They never, ever talked to us again. It was like, oh my God, a little truth here. You know, it was the end. It was the absolute end of something. So there's no safety in any of this. But I felt better telling them the truth than not. And if we don't see them again, if we didn't, then so what?
So would you say the best you can do is try to be open to everybody instead of saying, you know, this person was mean to me because they cut me off because they don't like what I'm doing.
Yeah, if you really get it, it's not about trying to be open to everybody. It's about being open mm-hmm. to everybody. Everybody messes up. Everybody says the wrong thing. Everybody is totally lost. Everybody's scared. Everybody wants to be loved. I mean, there's nobody out there who doesn't want what you want. So give it to them. That's the joy of a spiritually awakened person, that your job is to give the thing that people want. And you can give it. And it doesn't have to be praise. It doesn't have to be some kind of, or even criticism. It can just be simple acknowledgement, love, truth, and it will serve them, and it will serve you. Sometimes it will be hurtful for them, maybe, but not really. They'll get the truth of it. Sometimes it will make them feel like, thank you for knowing who I am. That's what you can do. I think when I leave here and Blanche leaves here at the end of the summer, I would love every one of you to be one of those people, if you're not already, someone who just walks around and gives silently and openly to everyone who arises in your presence, and know that they arose in your presence so you could give them love, acknowledgement, you could hear them, you could see them. That's all they want, and you can do that all day long, and you will find that this presence is active all the time, and it's the gift ultimately to you, because you can live in that. There's no return for it. There's nothing that comes back that serves you, but there's everything that serves greater self. It's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, there was he shall remain unnamed, but very famous movie star who came to his patient, and these were like six blockbuster movies, it was ridiculous. And the first thing he did is he sat down in front of me, he said, "Doc," he says, "I want you to know one thing." He says, "It's all bullshit. You know, all the money, the fame, all this stuff." And I said, "I agree with you, you know." And somewhere down the road, we kind of got a little closer, and he said to me, "Why don't you write a book? I'll get you on TV." He knew the guy who does all the programming for TV. And I said, want to do that? For what reason, you know? Because he's the one who told me, he says, you're the rich man. He told me I was a rich man.
Well, yeah, and if you go on TV, your riches will change character, yeah. Honestly. If you try to get fame out, I mean, I've seen the fame route, and I understand the allure of it, I understand the power of it. It doesn't deliver just the way he said it doesn't deliver. And then the fact that he wanted to sell you to get it is the way he truly probably doesn't fully get it either. You know, I've been there, I mean, I really have been there. And I mean, not on that level exactly, but I know that the world is not the source of your happiness. That's all I can tell you. It delivers moments, but the source of your happiness is this ability to see the world as it is and the ability to draw from it the love that comes up at any given moment and to go, that's what it is. You know, the love for my granddaughter and the love I have for her, I say this a lot now, is enough reason to have come into this world. Nothing I've ever had in the realm of my career equals that. Nothing. Not for a second. You can give me, you know, Oscars, you can give me big checks. It goes on and on. Nothing compares to hugging my granddaughter. And that's all. I would have been born, I would have come into the world just for that. Okay. Thank you, guys. this will be, you know, we've got about, I can't tell you how many more classes left, somewhere between 10 and 15. So it's time to get, things can happen. And a year from now, you know, maybe Blanche and I can come back, and if we can find a space anywhere, we can still do something. You know, we can all sit together and still share time.
How about a small house? A cottage?
Yeah, sure. Well, it doesn't matter what. I mean, I'm not talking about buying it. Just that we can get a place for a week or two and have some classes. You know, I mean, that could, there's no reason not to be able to do that.
But can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Why don't we all get together and rent something you can teach in all summer as a summer rental somewhere?
That, well, I mean, honestly,
I'm willing to chip in.
Thank you. Honestly, I'm going to do something like that with my granddaughter in Seattle. I'm going to get a beach house near her, a lake near her, and I'll spend part of the summer there. But I would take a month, a few weeks, and come here and let us do that. I would love it if we all were together somewhere. You know, I mean, who knows? Big Indian might even be available.
We could do it at our house.
Well, that's a possibility. It's just a matter of the space.
We just created a space about this size for this purpose. And so if we're desperate, you can just come to my place, and it's a pretty big...
That's great.
Pretty big house.
I mean, I know we can find a way if we all want to do it. And, you know, and we'll just get a chance to sit more and share all this and continue without it being a weekly thing. But it will have nourishment, and it will be available. So we'll work it out. Thank you, guys.